Good afternoon. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is August the 12th, 2021. And for those who are American citizens living outside the United States, well, a number of you are looking to renounce U.S. citizenship, but that's not the news. The real news is that after having closed the opportunities for renunciation in March of last year, they have reopened in Canada and other places to at least clean up the backlog. And I am pleased to have joining with me today Robert Nielsen, who lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, who did in fact get his application to renounce in before the COVID shutdown and was recently able to renounce and is now the proud owner of what for some people is simply the most sought after document in the world today, a certificate of loss of nationality. And Robert is joining me today to talk about his history, the renunciation odyssey, if you will, and how his being born as an accidental American brought him to this position. So welcome, Robert. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great, John. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And thanks for joining me in this conversation. Well, thing is, to renounce U.S. citizenship, you kind of got to be a U.S. citizen. So why don't we start there?
Sure.
How'd you get that U.S. citizenship anyway?
So, yeah, I was it's one of these things, John, where I was my dad had gone down to university in the United States, had met my mother in the United States. They decided to get married. They came back to Canada and decided to raise a family in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and had four children. And we just kind of blissfully lived our lives as Canadian citizens living in Canada for, for our entire lives. Worked in Canada, went to school in Canada, everything just living as Canadian citizens. So weren't even aware, John, that we were American citizens at the time. So it was
what an unusual story. I'm only kidding. Yeah, what an unusual story. Okay, so basically, father goes to the USA, meets mother, they get married, move back to Canada, or in her case, move to Canada. It was probably very exciting for her. You arrive and basically because your mother had presumably lived there till after her education, after college or whatever, she lived in the United States long enough to transmit U.S. citizenship to you. And that's why you're a U.S. citizen, I guess, right?
That's correct.
And how did you find out about this anyway? You said you were blissfully living your life as a Canadian.
We were doing everything Canadian, and it was only very much later on. My parents had both retired and they had moved down to the United States. So being, the dutiful children we are, I'd go down at Christmas time and go visit with them at Christmas. And one Christmas I was going down and being interviewed as us Canadians are when we cross the border. Border guards asking me where am I going? What are my intentions? What am I doing? And I tell them I'm visiting my mother. They continue to ask questions, they live down there, and we finally land on that she's an American citizen, and he informs me that I'm an American citizen.
Oh, my God. Now, how do you feel about that? That moment, that watershed moment in your life where you're told, you, Robert, you're an American citizen. How did you feel about that?
Well, I have to say, at first, it didn't even make any sense to me, but honestly, it didn't. At first, I just kind of thought nothing of it. It's like somebody telling me that I've got Danish heritage. You just kind of go, oh, okay, that's fine. And really,
so you were neither upset by it nor proud of it. You just saw it as a circumstance.
I saw it as a circumstance. They told me I had to have a U.S. passport. Otherwise, I can be, fined. And I guess all these bad things happen. So I just want to be able to go visit my mom. So I gathered up all the paperwork and sent it in. And next thing I knew, I was the proud owner of an American passport.
And were you also the proud recipient of an American Social Security number?
I was. They sent me that. And of course,
did you see that letters as sort of a bonus?
Well, not really, because in bold letters, Don, of course, it says not valid for employment, which seemed kind of odd to me at the time. But again, I don't really know. I wasn't planning on living or working in the U.S., so I didn't really give it much thought. But yeah, so yeah, I was all set. I was all set with a Social Security number and a passport. So yeah, I
mean, do you also have a Canadian passport?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
So you had two passports.
Yes.
Two passports, two citizenships, and what's American citizenship all about?
Well, yeah, I just don't really know, right? I found out what it's all about because...
Tell me about that moment. So we've talked about the moment of learning you're American. Now, yeah. Tell me about the moment of learning that as an American, you were taxable, even though you lived in Canada. Tell me about that moment.
So my dad was down in the U.S. and he's talking to his accountant and just talking as people do. And he informed me that, you know, that his son had got his American citizenship, and the accountant, you know, gleefully informs him that, oh, well, that makes him, I mean, he has to be filing an American tax. He has to do a tax return because of the citizenship or the tax.
Now, was this an accountant in the U.S. or in Canada?
An accountant in the U.S. Yeah. So he'd take the forms in. Yeah. So his accountant in the U.S. says, oh, he's an American. He has to do American taxes. So again, I didn't really think much of it, John. I mean, so I...
communicated to you by your father?
Correct.
And did he call up and say, well, Robert, I have good news and I have bad news?
Well, you know, no, again, it's just naive, right? Just kind of, you just don't know. I mean, I would do my Canadian taxes on QuickTax for $20. So I'm thinking, you know what? Another $20 for the U.S. that shouldn't be too bad. So, but I went, when I was down visiting him at Christmas, I'd brought my stuff down. So we went down to the accountants together and I gave my stuff and I was down there for 2 weeks.
It's like a family bonding thing.
It really is. Yeah. Those who get taxed together. Yeah. So, yep. That's what it felt like. So yeah.
A family who files taxes together bonds together.
They absolutely do. Not in this particular case, but yeah. So yeah, so they did the taxes for me, John, and he emerges with this document that's probably about an inch thick and a bill for $600. And
$600 US dollars.
$600 US dollars.
But yes. You did get 1 inch of documents.
I did, absolutely. So I was happy about that, I guess.
You were. Well, if I were paying $600 for a tax return, I'd want a lot of pages too.
I realized at this particular point in time that, like, I was in hell, like, really, this was going to be a problem. And
it about the big stack of documents and the $600 bill that alerted you to this being a problem?
Well, you know, because he tells me the good news is, of course, because the foreign income exclusion and I don't even know all the words he was using, but I didn't owe any U.S. taxes. So I thought, well, that's good because
How cool is that?
How could I? That would only have added like injury to the insult to this at all, because like it's bad enough that I'm spending all this money on a tax return every year and I'm gonna have to pay the U.S. government where I get like nothing, zero for it. That would have just been over the top.
And just hold on a minute, Robert. You know, very recently a senior tax lawyer wrote into Tax Notes objecting to the notion that Americans abroad should be somehow use the word exempt from U.S. taxes on the basis that there are all these benefits of U.S. citizenship. Could you tell me something about the benefits that you received of U.S. citizenship?
I haven't really detected any yet, John. Well, actually, I take that back. I got one. But I mean, I know that like I can't work in the U.S. My Social Security number wasn't valid for employment. I know that I wouldn't qualify for any benefits that I was aware of in the U.S. I know that if I wanted to retire there, my Social Security, you have to work there for so long to earn points to keep your price down. So my health insurance would be crazy. The only thing I did get, though, is I did receive $2,000 from the U.S. government in economic impact payments. So, I mean, that was nice of them, I guess.
Was it the COVID stuff?
The COVID stuff, yes.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty decent of them, isn't it?
Well, it was funny because it was during this waiting time, John. I was just waiting. I think I mentioned to you, I've been waiting for like 17 months. And that's kind of when COVID kicked in. And I was really...
We were waiting because of COVID.
I was waiting because of COVID. And I was ready to spend my $2,350 to get my piece of paper. I had determined that. And then, like, lo and behold, the U.S. government sends me $2,000. So I viewed it kind of like a sale. So it kind of worked out for me that I really had to spend $350 on it.
That's true. So, they were subsidizing the cost of your renunciation to some degree.
Yeah.
Let's not get too much ahead of ourselves here. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I am kind of curious. Oh, actually, I wanted to make a comment on something you just said. Did you just say that you thought you did not, that you were not entitled to work in the United States?
That's correct. Because based on what I got on my social security number, when they sent me the social security number with my passport, it says not valid for employment.
That's completely wrong. If you're a U.S. citizen, of course you can be employed there. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the benefits of U.S. citizenship, is the right to live and work there. I mean, those are clear benefits, you know. So, I mean, that's very odd that you were given that information.
Yeah. So, and that's, yeah, it was printed right on the card. So.
Oh my God, that's really something. Well, you ought to definitely keep this stuff as a souvenir. So now let's go back to your one page of documents that you pay.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember what was in this? I mean, that's a lot of pages, one inch.
It's a lot of pages. And, you know, it was just, a lot of it was filled too, John. Like, it wasn't just like a bunch of blank paper. Like, there was numbers everywhere. And so I had
numbers,
no idea
what forms.
Was going on. Oh, yeah. Every form in the book and numbers on each of the forms, right?
So, a form for this and a form. What is it that you were doing that required so much reporting and forms? Like, what were you doing for employment? Well, how were you making your living?
Yeah, so, well, at that time, I was just out of university and I had my first job. So, you know, I was probably pulling down a cool $2,000 a month at the time. So so I could see that I would be a big revenue opportunity for the U.S. government, I guess. But yeah, no, other than that, no, I wasn't, hadn't invented anything, didn't have my own corporation or anything.
Okay, so you have no trust, no corporations.
Nope.
This is 30 years ago. We don't have like the form 8938 or anything. So I mean, what in the world could you have like an inch thick of pages?
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. And it's only got thicker, John. It only got thicker.
So, well, you know what it means to be the fundamental rule or principle of American citizenship is this: report early, report everything, report often, and by God, keep a record of what you're reporting. So maybe some of the pages were reports plus the record of what you were reporting.
Maybe so, I don't know.
But anyway, that is incredible. So you're making $2,000 a month in Canada and you're given a $600 bill by a U.S. tax preparer.
Yes.
That says you owe no tax and it's an inch thick. Did you understand any of it?
No.
You just understood that this is going to be trouble.
I understood it was going to be trouble, John. That's what I understood, because I realized $600 when you're making $2,000 a month, that's a big chunk of your money that you're going to be spending every year.
Well, it's $50 a month, isn't it?
Yeah. You think, and for what, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you feel that maybe you should be paying that because of the benefit of being a U.S. citizen? I mean, that's what this
maybe
article
so.
Says.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe I wasn't really realizing all the intrinsic benefits of it, because I know there's no monetary benefit. So maybe there is something else, some bask or glow or something I was supposed to receive by having it. But yeah, I don't know, John.
Robert, in 1924, there was a U.S. Supreme Court decision written by Justice McKenna in a case called Cook versus Tate, where he says the U.S. government, by its very nature, benefits its citizens. Were you feeling that?
I can honestly say no. I was not feeling that at all.
Okay. All right. So you come back to Canada now. You're a young guy. You're just sort of out of school. You're making your $2,000 a month. How's your life unfold from this point? What happens?
You know, you just kind of, you can carry on with your life. You're doing, we're kind of trying to build your career, doing your things, just kind of going ahead. Just everything's just kind of like normal. And then, you know, you just start finding out you're filling out more and more forms, of course, right? So
tell me about the next, we'll call it the next form moment in your life. Your next big form, your next big memorable form moment.
Yeah. So I got my first FBAR form that I had to fill out.
Whoa, Mr. FBAR.
And to me, like, I was shocked that I don't even think the Canadian government has that level of information on me, at least kind of not all summarized in one place, and that I would have to send this in from what really was more or less just a glorified Adobe form, kind of sending this thing in to the US government, detailing every account that I have over $10,000, you know, with the account numbers and the bank and everything. And
were these all accounts in Canada that you had?
Yes, just accounts in Canada.
Yeah. Did you have any accounts outside, like say Cayman Islands, Switzerland? Any of
No, nothing like that.
Have you ever been to Switzerland?
I never have. No.
Have you ever been to the Cayman Islands?
2 years ago, so that's about it.
But that was after having filed FBARs for many years.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you go there just to see what the banks might look like there, or why did you go there?
Well, I know that when I went there, I can see that that's no place I'd be able to live. That's for sure. The dinghies to get out to the yachts are fancier than anything I could ever afford. So.
Okay, so basically you're living your life and your next major form moment is where you learn about Mr. FBAR. Okay, so you start mailing in those. And, you know, that is true. It's interesting how, you know, the way this U.S. tax filing stuff works, the U.S. has more information about Canadian citizens living in Canada than the Canada Revenue Agency does, right?
Yeah. That's what it would seem to me, Don. That's what it would seem to me.
Do you think it would make sense for the Canada Revenue Agency to simply pay U.S. Treasury fee to get information on Canadians?
Well, I don't think that the U.S. would do that, would they? So I would think that.
That would be an obligation to give something up, wouldn't it? Yeah, you know, you might be right. Okay, so you're moving along your life, your career is developing, you start filing FBARs. I mean, this sounds like a normal life cycle. Well, what happens then? What's your next big form moment?
Well, so my next. Like,
what
big
did
one
you
is,
do, Robert? What you must have done something.
Well, I started to realize that, like, this has got to stop. I just can't keep, it just didn't make any sense. You know, it's funny, John, I have to say, it was kind of, you're probably familiar with that, kind of the five stages of grief. I was kind of going through those five stages of, you know, accidental American sort of thing, because at first, I can't believe this is happening to me, and then I'm getting mad about it, and then you kind of think, well, maybe I'll move to the U.S., and then you start to just get to the point you realize, you're going to have to do something about this because it just gets crazier and crazier. I was, you know, when the Canadian government introduced the TFSAs.
And that was what, 2008 or Robert, you didn't get a TFSA, did you?
Well, everybody told me that if you are an American citizen, you better not, because that's deemed a foreign trust. And even the tax preparers tell you that.
Most of them are not foreign trusts, but okay. But I do know that, so they tell you. So you walked into your account. By the way, who's doing your taxes? Are you still doing the $600 U.S. tax account? Or you found?
No, so I moved that. So just kind of to a Canadian tax preparer to.
So you were helping the Canadian economy.
That's correct. So
all right. Well, that's good. So your U.S. citizenship has been a benefit, perhaps, to Canada.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Okay, so how are you still paying your $600 or how much are you paying
now? Oh, no, the price is pretty much doubled by now, right? So because I do my own FBAR still, because that would just be too much. But to do all the forms and to do, I don't have any mutual funds because I know that's something else again, or at least so I'm told. And my TFSAs, my tax preparer tells me that those were foreign trusts. So I'm doing the 3520s, the 3520As. And like it just goes on and on, and the prices
goes higher. Do you have the feeling as an American in Canada that basically everything is prohibited unless specifically allowed?
I honestly believe that because now I'm getting to the point where I'm planning on retiring, and everything I do, John,
Americans do not retire.
Everything
they work
I
forever
do.
To pay the U.S.
I always have to stop and think whatever I do, and I am actually serious. Whenever you stop to do anything now, I had to stop and think, what is this going to mean from a U.S. tax perspective? What can of worms am I opening by something that every other Canadian could just normally do as part of tax planning and, you know, general employment and generating an income? And for me,
okay, so it's 2008 or 2009. I think it was the Harper government invents the TFSA.
Yes.
And did you sort of say, Thank you, Prime Minister. This is my name written. I should have one too. As a Canadian, absolutely. I should be able to have a TFSA.
I absolutely should. Absolutely.
So you went out and got a TFSA.
Went out and got a TFSA. Yes.
What kind of TFSA? Was it like a bank account or something?
So the very first one, yeah. I mean, it was literally like it had GIC sort of things in it, right? I mean, it's just something.
Oh my God, that's subversive. So you walked into a bank and said, "I'm here because I want a TFSA." Is that what you did?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And did they say, "Just 1 minute, are you an American?"
No, they did not. No.
What did they do?
They gave me the forms and I filled it out and I walked away with the TFSA.
And would you put money in the TFSA or you bought a GIC or something?
I bought a GIC that was existing in it just because I knew I wanted to have money in it. So
went to what, your tax preparer, and he said, or she said, "So what's new this year?" And you said, "Well, what's new is I have a TFSA." Is that what happened?
Essentially, because it's on the FBAR, essentially, John. So you have to list all your accounts, right? So my first few years, of course, I flew under the radar because it was under $10,000. But then as soon as it hit over $10,000, of course, then I'm listing it on my FBAR. And they go, "Oh, this is a TFSA. This is actually a foreign trust." So,
oh, my God. Now just think back to that moment. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that, I'm just going to imagine you sitting there and the taxer says, "Robert, you have a foreign trust." Now, how did you feel about that? How did you interpret it?
I thought they were kidding me. It was almost like if you ever saw a candid camera and you're kind of waiting for somebody to come out and kind of say, "You know, we were just kind of joking with you." It just seemed incredulous that, like, I'm just some guy working a job and all of a sudden I've got a foreign trust and I've got all these things going on. It just made zero sense.
Robert, if it had been a foreign trust, which it wasn't, but I know you're told that, if it had been a foreign trust, then you would have been the proud owner of what, from a U.S. perspective, would be a sacred instrument of tax evasion. Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't.
So you're sitting there. Now, how did you feel? Like, so, you know, you it's hard for you to believe. And then you probably said, "What does that mean?"
Exactly.
And what were you told? What does it mean?
Well, I have to fill out some more forms. So I need more forms that only they seem to be able to prepare. And I have to list off all the transactions, because at that time I was becoming more advanced in my TFSAs and I was trading stocks and things like that.
Oh, so God, Robert.
I'd be getting dividends and I would be selling capital gains. I know. So yeah, I was
very suspicious.
That was quite an undertaking for them to be able to prepare those too. So of course that only increases the bill.
It did increase the bill.
Definitely.
All right. So you're sending in what, a 3520 and a 3520A. Is that what you were sending?
Correct.
In?
Okay. Correct.
And paying hefty fees to have these filled out?
Absolutely.
So, okay. And
I would say the fee, John, I'd say the fee probably exceeded what I had received like in dividends in these things for the year.
Of course it did. Of course it did. I have no doubt about that. All right. Yeah. Now, you know, I'll tell you, Robert, if you've been following this, when you talk like 3520A, in the last couple of years, a lot of people have been getting $10,000 fines for filing 3520As.
Yes, and I'm with that. So I'm the proud owner of quite a stack of collection letters and fines from the IRS
for the 3520 3520 or the 3520A.
Well, both actually. So I got it for the 3520. I sent it back and I said, "You guys received it." So, you know, 6 months later, they sent me, said, "Oh yeah." So then I got a $10,000 penalty for the 3520A. And I told them, "You've received it." So 6 months later, they go, "Oh yeah," they canceled that. And then the next year I got another $10,000 penalty for the same year, for the same form again, plus another $10,000 penalty for the next year's 3520.
Didn't you feel good that at least you were consistently getting these things? I mean, there were no surprises. You learned to expect them, didn't you?
It was kind of like spring, John. You know, the snow
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it is. It's
the Groundhog Day penalty.
I know it's spring when I got mail from the IRS. Another fine from the IRS. Absolutely.
Isn't that amazing? So, but why were you getting the fines at all? I don't understand that. Why were you getting the fines?
Well, I don't understand either. They're saying they didn't get them, even though I know they've got them. And I guess it was my mistake at the point. I didn't realize I had to like courier and get a signature for every form I send, because as anybody who does this has, or you're aware, is you got to send multiple copies of these things to all over the US. It's crazy. It's just crazy. I just couldn't believe this
happened. So if you've had a TFSA since 2008 or 2009, I mean, it's impossible to have megabucks in it. I mean, unless you're a magical investor,
I
right?
wish I could tell you I did, John, but no, sadly not. No.
Yeah. I how did I know? Because it's almost impossible. Okay. Yeah. All right. So in other words, for what's really a small amount of money, you know, you're basically getting these, these penalties, these allegations of having committed egregious form crimes against the government
Correct.
Of the United States.
Absolutely.
What did your tax preparers say about this? I mean, do they have any thoughts on this at all, or just pay, right?
Oh, well, they say, no, you're on your own, is basically what they say. I mean, they fill out the form, but any interactions you have with the IRS, that's strictly your problem. They fill out forms. They don't, they weren't acting as a representative for me. I just basically say, good luck. And they'd happily send me another copy of the form.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. So what would you say then? I mean, in terms of multiples of thousands of dollars, I mean, how much are you paying up penalties?
Well, I've paid zero, of course.
Many, what's the amount that's been assessed against you?
Well, I would say it would be probably 50,000, 30,000 for particular years, but I give them the benefit of the doubt. And when they fine me for the same thing for the same year that they've forgiven for me before, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying that's not an additional fine. That's just the same fine. So
well, Robert, why would you give them the benefit of the doubt? They don't give you the benefit of the doubt. If you fail to report it twice on an FBAR or something, the different.
Account. That's for sure. No, I know. I know.
You're a Canadian. You're
I'm a Canadian. I'm a Canadian.
I mean, exactly. they would not be that. Clearly, they're not that way with you. Well, that's interesting. So you got all this going on, and you've got at this point, what? How many years of filing U.S. taxes?
20 some odd. Yeah.
Would you say that filing U.S. taxes has been a significant part of your life?
It makes for a never-ending tax season, and I'm serious about that, because it's not like the Canadian where I just can get my T5s and my T4s and hammer it into TurboTax and send it off. It's a lot of gathering and getting stuff organized and getting all the stuff ready so that it can be prepared, and then it disappears, and it takes them like months for them to come back and get this prepared, and they always need something else. So it pretty much makes tax season all year round.
I mean, you make it sound as though U.S. citizenship, at least living outside the United States, is nothing but a never-ending succession of taxes, forms, and penalties.
Well, that's what it is to me, John. That's what it is to me. I've got nothing else out of it.
So at some point, you said, enough is enough.
Correct. I did.
What happened then?
Well, I was moving into retirement, and again, I was thinking I wanted to have my own little company, do some consulting. From following yourself and following other people, I realized that for me, as this dual citizen of America, and I realized this, I was all of a sudden going to have a foreign-controlled corporation on my hands. And
controlled foreign corporation, Robert, CFC.
Yeah.
Remember. Another sacred instrument of tax evasion.
I can't imagine how many more forms that would be, but I realized at that particular point in time, if I want to do that, I'm either going to have to, I had no choice. I had to make this end so that I can just kind of live the rest of my life in peace. I just had to make this go away.
Well, I think it's more than that, isn't it? It's not only live your life in peace, but being able to live your life under the tax system where you live and with those benefits,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and not have to make the decisions, your decisions based on a foreign government's tax system. This doesn't make any sense.
No, it's madness. It's madness. I mean, you know, yep. You may think that some people think, wow, isn't this cool? You get to file U.S. taxes. But I mean, it's another world, isn't it? I think
it's
the mistake
another
people
world.
Make is they think that filing, wherever they live in the world, people think that filing a U.S. tax return is like filing whatever return they file in their own country, right?
But absolutely, that's what
nothing
I thought.
Like yeah. it. Nothing like it at all.
Nothing like it.
All right. So when you said, I've had enough, I'm not going to take it anymore, you decided yep. you were going to renounce, right?
Correct.
What happened then?
So I started to research that because, again, I didn't even know that would be an option. I just felt it was just like something you have, you know, you just, it's, I didn't know that I could make this go away because you just don't know. I just, this is all, it's been a learning experience. So I start to research it and I start to see people that are holding seminars and webinars on helping you renounce your U.S. citizenship. So decided, well, I'm going to probably need some help with this. And So I sit in on one of these and I kind of hear the information and scares the crap out of me about everything that's going on and all these things.
Wasn't that scared you? I mean, I thought that it would have been a description of sort of a heavenly state of bliss of non-US citizenship. It wasn't that?
It was all these penalties and the costs and the processes and these complex forms. And boy, you say the wrong thing and you could find yourself, you know, inadmissible to the U.S. in the future. And sitting there thinking, this is a pretty scary thing. And it's a pretty big decision that I'm getting ready to do here. And I, because I still want to be able to go to the U.S., just live my life as a Canadian, you know, go down, spend my tourist dollars and come home. And I don't want
so
to find myself
this hard.
Did you
have the feeling, though, when you were listening to all this, that it would take great courage to renounce?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I just.
Well, you're a courageous man, Robert, because by God, you did it.
I did. And
would that be one of the proudest moments of your life?
I can't say you take anything proud out of having to give that up, John. I mean, my mother was a proud American, right? So I was happy to carry the American passport for a while. I wish I didn't have to carry the cost of it. But I mean, she was a proud American. I get that. But, you know, I have to say now, like all these months later, 17 months later, it feels great that you can kind of sit there and just plan and not have to worry about having this boat anchor pulling you under at every turn that you make. So that's good.
That's an interesting way to put it, as kind of an anchor. Okay, yep. So you leave the seminar, you're scared out of your mind.
Yes.
What happens next?
So I talked to...
Did you say counseling? Psychological counseling?
Should have. Financial, everything. So, I just made an appointment to talk with these folks that are running it and to kind of get a quote, and I get a quote of what it's going to cost to be able to do this for me. And I'm a pretty simple guy. I live a simple life, and I sit there and I'm thinking what the cost of this was going to be. And I think, well, all of a sudden you think, well, the cost of doing this versus the cost of just filing my U.S. taxes until I die, like it almost starts to become a saw off, right? So it doesn't really make much sense. So, but then I start to research it some more and I start to find people who are, you know, more pragmatic and kind of tell you the truth rather than trying to generate business, I guess, for lack of anything more tactful. And you realize it's not that bad or onerous a thing. For a simple guy like me, I get people have complex tax issues. But for me, simple guy, simple life, it shouldn't be that bad. So interesting. I went to the U.S. website and didn't realize that, like, this loss of citizenship, they have entire pages designated to it and the special centers set up for it. I realized this isn't some sort of like a, you know, once, you know, maybe three people a year do this. This is clearly a big, big chunk of the embassies and the consulates' day-to-day business is just processing these forms for these people. And they had a separate mailing box for the Canadian filing. So you kind of submit your forms and you get all the automated forms into the Canadian system. And unfortunately, that's kind of when COVID hit and it just went into this great big void. And you can't contact the U.S. Embassy at all to find out what's going on. You don't know if you filled out the forms correctly. I didn't want to be sitting there waiting 2 years to find out that I didn't fill out some form correctly, because that has been my experience with U.S. government and forms is you haven't filled out something right, and God, it's probably going to get a $10,000 penalty from the embassy for not filling out my form right. So I don't know, right?
Pronunciation fee. Here's $2,350 for the pronunciation, and an extra $10,000 for not checking this box, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you live in fear, right? So I didn't know. It was just into this vacuum, John, and I hadn't heard. You don't hear anything. Just nothing. And meanwhile, your life's ticking on, and I want to be able to set up a little business, and you're just kind of frozen in time. You can't do anything.
But you made it. You made it. You renounced.
I made it. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Now, you know, I know that there's a lot of stuff out there about how, you know, horribly tricky the renunciation interview is and all that. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I have to say, you know, the embassy folks, at first, like, I was literally the only person in the building, and some people
did that make you feel unsafe?
No, but it made me wonder why I sat there for 45 minutes, and I thought maybe this was some passive-aggressive way of kind of teaching you a lesson for giving up your U.S. citizenship, and even the security guards would walk by and surprise that I'd still be sitting there. But anyway, I finally went to talk to these folks, and I have to say, John, like, they are empathetic, to say the least, and I would say borderline apologetic. It's a simple thing. They say, they look at my documents. They say, see, you weren't born in the U.S. You don't have any connection to the U.S. They said, do you feel that you are an American, or do you feel that you're a Canadian? And I said, I'm a Canadian, born and raised in Canada. They go, okay, great, thanks. Wicket two, they'll take your payment, and you know, a security guard will see you out. And that was the process.
And then a few weeks later, the certificate of loss of nationality arrived in the mail.
Yep. They sent me my certificate of loss of nationality, my passport with a hole drilled through it. And very conveniently, they also sent me a form 8854 to fill out from the IRS.
Well, now that's interesting. Okay. I've actually not heard that people are getting the 8854. So that's new information.
Yeah.
Actually, that's significant information, because that's not a State Department form. That's an IRS form.
Right.
All right. So you're going to do the 88. You might, you know, you've been on the tax system all this long. You're going to do the 8854, which is means you're permanently logging out. Okay.
Absolutely. Yep.
By the way, you're a dual citizen from birth. Don't forget to check that off.
Right.
You're born in Canada to an American mother. You're a dual citizen from birth. That's a good fact.
Yep.
Okay, among other things. And also, by the way, you have to send that to two distinct locations. But
I'm not surprised to hear that at all.
I will leave that for you to work with a tax preparer on that. But you've come this far, Robert. I mean, you know, get yourself over that finish line properly.
I absolutely will, John. I cannot wait. I honestly can't wait.
How did it feel the day you got the CLM, the mail? Like, what was the...
I have to say, like, you know, it was fantastic. It just felt like this painful journey of just always having this kind of hanging around your neck is finally gone. I just, I can't even begin to explain it. It's you just all of a sudden, you're no longer beholden to these.
Well, you sent out this tweet on August 7th. Can I read parts of the tweet into our podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the Robert Nielsen tweet. After 17 months, I now finally have received my CLN. Best of luck to the rest of you. And then we have a photo shot of a summary. May I read this?
Absolutely.
Where Robert describes his life as, it's called My Life as an Accidental American. And here we go. Not born in the USA, never lived or worked in the USA. 28,000 paid in U.S. tax preparation compliance services, zero paid in U.S. taxes, 30,000 in IRS fines received in form non-compliance penalties, zero paid to the IRS in form non-compliance penalties, 17 months spent waiting to renounce U.S. citizenship, 2,000 paid by U.S. Treasury in economic impact payments, those are the COVID stuff. You say waste of U.S. taxpayer money, probably. $2,350 U.S. dollars paid to U.S. Treasury in fees to gain freedom. Okay, let's see. $16 paid in courier fees to send me the CLN. Yeah, you think that would have included that in the 20?
You'd think that'd be they'd cover the postage, but
60 minutes CLN interview, 45 minutes waiting, 10 minute interview, 5 minutes collecting their fee, 10 more days waiting to receive my CLN notice, one certificate of loss of nationality finally received, and notably in conclusion, one relieved Canadian citizen forced into U.S. citicide because of CBT.
Correct.
Should that be on your tombstone?
You know what? I'm all for that, John. I'm all for it.
All right. Well, you know, this has been, you know, certainly a lighthearted interview, and, you know, deliberately so, because, I mean, these are very stressful, problematic things in reality, you know, very, very clearly. And people are being forced into this. I think there's little doubt about it. I have no idea why the U.S. somehow can't, you know, doesn't want to correct its behavior in this regard, but it is what it is. And, you know, as we bring this to an end, I would invite you, you know, any bit of advice that you'd like, you know, for people going through this, particularly accidental Americans like yourself, any closing thoughts you'd like to offer them, anybody?
Well, the only thing I can say, John, and it's something that you actually say, and I just, it just really resonates with me that, you know, you can look at this from all different angles, try to figure out different ways to kind of live with this, kind of work with it. But at the end of the day, I do think that all roads lead to renunciation. I just do not believe that if you have any intention of living in the U.S., that you should prolong the agony. I think you just need to move on with it.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And, you know, I really want to thank you for your generosity in doing this podcast with me today. I you know, your situation, I mean, everybody's situation is critical to them. But I think it's very, very helpful, you know, to hear from people who've actually sort of gone through this. And you've been incredibly generous in the degree to which you've been open and shared this, you know, obviously in many respects, painful experience that you've had. So I thank you for that very much.
Okay. Oh, it's my pleasure, John.
Okay.